Welcome to my Bob Thurman podcast. I'm so grateful some good friends enabled me to present them to you. If you enjoy them and find them useful, please think of becoming a member of Tibet House US to help preserve Tibetan culture. Tibet House is the Dalai Lama's cultural center in America. All best wishes. Have a great day.
This is episode 95, Fierce Deities of Buddhism.
Sorry. Okay, there we go.
We're coming back up here on the fierce deities. And the whole topic of fierce deities is kind of intense. Heruka, they're called Heruka. Like how I always think of Hercules myself. Oh, I say here, yes, cognate with Hercules. Heruka, hey. Hey is considered to be the syllable that signifies objective selflessness. And Ru signifies personal selflessness. I'm not sure why. And Ka signifies their non-duality. So Heruka is a sort of heroic form, symbolizing a being that sort of like drains the blood of the samsara, you know, to make it, to turn it into nirvana, you know. Destroys the samsara to create the nirvana in a very fierce manner, you know. And so why do we have these fierce deities? Because sometimes people don't respond to the mild deities and they are still wandering there and they're still lost in that samsaric world. So then they near these fierce deities. Here's the picture of the fierce deities in the book here. Pretty wild, though. We have the picture here. Yeah. Very, very wild. And because one wanders in the between state, there's all kind of dreadful things that happen and visions that happen. And so these deities are the least of the tantric yoga practitioners. When they see the Heruka deity host, recognize them at once as their archetype deities, like meeting old friends, and they feel faith toward them. Merging non-dually with them, they become Buddha. Further, those who in the human realm practice the visualizations of these Heruka deities, made offerings and praises, or at least made paintings of the deities, or saw sculptures of them, and so forth, just that by that, they will recognize the arisal of these deities and be liberated. And this is the key point. And so the fierce deities are really intense, you know. And they, in a way, what it is one is in a fierce zone by this time. If one has not recognized already and become lucid in the between state and gone into one of the clear light entryways, a brilliant deity heart entryways into the clear light, the peaceful place of the infinite energy where there's therefore no need to do anything or go anywhere, and that energy is just absorbed and enjoyed. And if one has still failed to do that, then one is in a sort of fierce realm by this time. And all kinds of negative images are arising in the mind and one feels frightened. And so meeting these fierce beings is like who yet are on your side, who yet are there for you, and they seem to be capable of handling anything difficult that might arise, is they feel they're like the protectors, you know, they're like guardians. So therefore they calm you down, you know. But let's visualize one of them. Hey, noble one, we go into meditation maybe. I'll read it. Listen without wavering. The peaceful between already dawned, but you did not recognize the light. So now you still must wander here. Now on this eighth day, the Heruka, fierce deity host, will arise. Do not waver. Recognize them. Hey, noble one, the great glorious Buddha Heruka appears, wine maroon in color, with three faces, six arms, and four legs stretched out, his front face maroon, his right face white, his left face red, his entire body blazing with light rays. His eyes glare, fiercely terrifying. His eyebrows flash like lightning. His fangs gleam like new copper. He roars with laughter, ha-la-la and ha-ha-ha. And he makes loud hissing noises like shoo-hoo. His bright orange hair blazes upward, adorned with skull crown and sun and moon discs. His body is adorned with black snakes and a freshly severed head garland. His first right hand holds a wheel, the middle an axe, the third a sword. The first left hand holds a bell, the middle a plowshare, and the third a skull bowl. His consort Buddha, Prodishvari, which means the goddess of ferocity, enfolds his body, her right hand embracing his neck, her left hand offering him sips of blood from her skull bowl. She clucks a demon blood, that is. She clucks her tongue menacingly and roars like just like thunder. Both are ablaze with wisdom flames, shooting out from their blazing vajra hairs. They stand in the warrior's posture on a throne supported by Garudas. Thus they are eagle kind of beings. Thus they arise manifestly before you, having emerged from within your own brain. Do not fear them. Do not be terrified. Do not hate them. Recognize them as an image of your own awareness. He is your own archetype deity, so do not panic. In fact, they are really Lord Vairochana, father and mother, so do not be afraid. The very moment you recognize them, you will be liberated. So let's now meditate on this. We're in a very iffy state. We have died. We have seen a bunch of visions of Buddhas and Pure Lands, but we somehow, they were too dazzling for us. We kind of couldn't imagine. We didn't trust them. So we're still wandering in a sort of dreamlike state, and things are beginning to go bad. We're seeing like earthquakes and like mountains falling down on top of us and flames bursting out like volcanic eruptions from out underneath our feet. We are like seeing floods flowing and ocean, sort of giant tidal waves coming at us, sort of monstrous creatures looming up around us. We're feeling quite frightened and worried in the middle of it. We're trying to remember these are just our hallucinations, but they seem so real. And we're very, very frightened. So suddenly, arising in front of us is this maroon red deity. Ferocious, four legs, six arms, three faces. Roaring sound. Roaring louder than all these like earth, water, fire. Hurricane type of frightening visions. We recognize in this fierce deity our protector. And we merge with them. And then as them we feel capable of withstanding whatever, nothing frightens us. We feel fearless. We have wings to rise above any floods or flames. We can stamp out any earthquakes. We can push back mountains with our powerful arms. Our shoulders branch into three powerful arms holding various weapons and tools and implements. We're embraced by a ferocious goddess who conquers all demons. Supernova flames flash out from us, consuming anything that attacks us. This Buddha Heruka archetype deity is adorned in the usual fierce deity way. His skull crown symbolizes his conquest of the five poisons of lust, hate, delusion, pride, and envy. His severed head garland symbolizes overcoming of all his own mental addictions and negative attitudes. His union with Krodishvari symbolizes the union of compassion with wisdom. His drinking of the blood from the skull bowl symbolizes the ability of ultimate reality wisdom to transmute the lifeblood of the demon of ignorance into the elixir of perfect freedom. with its blissful peacefulness and compassionate dynamism. Alternatively, blood is a symbol of the female of transcendent wisdom, and the male Heruka's drinking it symbolizes that wisdom is the source of the energy of compassion. The Heruka snake necklace, hair, ribbon, bracelets, anklets, and belt symbolize his subjugation of the serpent powers of the earth. The hand's implements symbolize various realizations and concentrations he can manifest to help beings break free of delusions and shatter bonds. Vajra means thunderbolt, diamond, lightning, a substance of the strongest force in the universe, which is the force of wisdom become love. The flames emitted by the deities, their hair and eyebrows, are Vajra-like in intensity, like controlled lightning, like white-hot welding heat, like contained supernova explosions. Vajra is the highest symbol of compassion as the ultimate power.
So that's cool.
So then, on the ninth day, then we have another one, the color of dark blue. Of course, is Akshobhya in a fierce form. On the tenth day, we have one who is yellow, dark yellow, who is the Ratnasambhava. On the 11th day, we have Padma Heruka, the lotus Heruka, the same as Amitabha, the lotus family, and the different reddish colors. And on the 12th day, we have the green Karma Heruka of the Karma clan with the fierce emerald color. And so we have these five apparitions, and they're all parallel and similar. Now we get into even heavier duty here for these really fierce goddesses. They're really something, these ones. Hey, noble one, now we're on the 13th day, I think. Actually, still the 12th day. And along with the karma one, we have these fierce goddesses. A lot of different goddesses come out on this 12th day. Like they go for broke on the 12th. There is the 13th day. Where's the 13th day? No. So it's just the 12th day. Then, if we don't get it on that 12th day, then there's no more counting of days. Now we're dealing with the text I wanted to get to. Because actually, it's an existence between. There's almost the best description of a between state being, which is very, very interesting. So, just dealing with the fierce ones more quickly. The eight Gauri goddesses will emerge from within your brain and appear to you. Do not fear them. From the east of your brain appears to your east a white Gauri, her right hand holding a corpse. It's a very kind of ogress type of goddess. Her right hand holding a corpse as a club and her left hand holding a blood-filled skull bowl. Do not fear her. From the south, a yellow Chauri aiming a bow and arrow. From the west, a red Pramoha holding a crocodile victory standard. From the north, a black Vitali. Vitali means a zombie. Holding a Vajra and a blood-filled skull bowl. From the southeast, an orange Pukasi. A southwest, a dark green Gasmadi. Northwest, a pale yellow Chandali. And northeast, a dark blue Shmashani. These are all sort of charnel ground goddesses, you know. These Gauri goddesses feeding on a headless body. I mean, they're really the Chandali holding a body and head across her shoulders, her right hand holding a heart, and her left hand feeding herself with the corpse. Pukasi holds intestines, and her left hand feeds them into her mouth. Gasmadi holds a blood-filled skull bowl and a Vajra, which she stirs the blood and feeds it into her mouth, sipping blood. So they're really ferocious. You know, like really down in the grisliest level of the material reality. Very, very fierce. And then these are the eight Gauris. And then there are the eight Pishachi, which are kind of goblins or ghouls of the Holy Lands, will appear to you. And these have animal heads. From the east, a dark maroon lion-headed Simhasya, that means lion-faced, crossing her arms over her chest, holding a corpse in her mouth and tossing her mane. From the south, a red tiger-headed Vyagrasya, holding her arms downward, staring hypnotically and gnashing her fangs. On the west, the black jackal-headed Shrigalasya. This Asya just means face, and Shrigala means a jackal, you know, with a razor in her right hand, holding and feeding on intestines in her left hand. From the north, a dark blue wolf-headed Shwanasya, lifting a corpse up to her mouth with her two hands and staring hypnotically. From the southeast, a light yellow vulture-headed Gurdrasya, carrying a corpse over her shoulder and holding a skeleton in her hand. From the southwest, a dark red hawk-headed Kankasya, carrying a corpse over her shoulder. From the northwest, a black crow-headed Kakasya with a sword in her right hand, eating lungs and heart. From the northeast, a dark blue owl-headed Ulukasya, eating flesh and holding a vajra in her right hand and a sword in her left. All these holy land Pishachi ghouls emerge from within your brain and appear to you surrounding the five Herukas. Do not fear them. Recognize whatever arises is the creativity of your own visionary awareness. And then there are four door guardianesses for a pretty mild comparison. Pig-headed Pasha, lion-headed Shrinkala, serpent-headed Ganta, and horse-headed Ankusha in the east. So outside of the 30 fierce Heruka deities, the 28 Ishwari goddesses with their various heads and their various implements will emerge from within your brain and appear to you. Do not fear them, but recognize them as the creativity of your own visionary awareness. At this time, when you have arrived at the crucial moment of cessation, remember the instruction of your spiritual teacher. And then there are more... So more descriptions of the different Rakshasi, Rami, Maheshwari, Lobha, Eastern Yoginis, Southern Yoginis. You know, there's six in each direction, Western Yoginis. And then four outer door garden Yoginis. So a tremendous bunch of fierce goddesses. All like with cooking and animal heads and like chewing on corpses. I mean, really destroying basically forms of wisdom. Forms of reality confrontation, destroying all attachment to sort of materialization, basically, really is what it is. Freeing you from any kind of attraction toward materialization, which is, of course, what the instinctual being is craving. They're feeling lost in this sort of space-like, dreamlike situation, and they want that. Hey, noble one, this ends. This whole fierce business ends. Hey, noble one. Oh, no, it goes on a bit longer. Hey, noble one, the truth body arises from the voidness side as the peaceful deities. Recognize it. The beatific body arises from the clarity side as the fierce deities. Recognize it. So the fierce deities are the bliss side. And so precisely the bliss side chews its way through all kind of like attraction to materialization. Its bliss is so intense. And the voidness side, and the voidness side and the clearness side, or the void side and the sight side, as I might say, you know, the dark side and the light side, almost like. So the truth body arises from the voidness side as the peaceful deity. Recognize it. And the beatific body arises from the clarity side, the vividness side, as the fierce deity. At this time, when the 58 deity Heruka host emerges from within your brain and appears before you, if you know that whatever arises is arisen from the natural energy of your own awareness, you will immediately become non-dual with the Heruka body and become a Buddha. That's very exciting. So there's a kind of non-duality of the mild and fierce. Nobody likes my mild. They have to say peaceful all the time. Mild is just perfect. Mild means peaceful. People think, oh, that's so wimpy, mild. Well, they are wimpy. Peaceful ones are wimpy. They're mild. Beautiful. Mild. Mild is nice. So, hey, noble one, if you do not recognize that, you will cling to the superficial reality, you know, the sort of breakthrough energy. The fierce deities are like breakthrough. Heruka is breaking through attachment, you know, breaking through hatred, using fierceness to, like, fierce passion, you know? It's really cool. Fierce compassion. It's totally cool. I was a little scared of that when I was younger. If you do not recognize that, you will cling to superficial reality, feel fear and hate, and flee these deities. You will go down again into excessive misery. If you do not recognize them, you will perceive the whole Heruka deity host as if they were Yamas, lords of death, and you will fear the Heruka deities. You will hate them. You will panic. You will faint. Your own visions having become devils, you will wander in the life cycle. Hey, noble one, these mild and fierce deities at most will be as big as space. At medium will be as large as the planetary axis. At the least will be as large as 18 times the height of your own body. So do not be afraid of them. All visible existence will arise as lights and deities. And all visions arising as lights and deities must be recognized as the natural energy of your own awareness. When your own energy dissolves non-dually into these natural lights and deities, you will become a Buddha. Oh, my child, when you see and perceive whatever terrifying visions occur, recognize them as your own vision. Recognize the clear light as the natural energy of your own awareness. If you so recognize, there is no doubt you will become a Buddha right away. The so-called instantaneous perfect Buddhahood will have come to pass. Remember this in your mind. Hey, noble one, if now you do not recognize the light, and if you cling to terror, all the mild deities will arise as black Mahakala guardians, and all the fierce deities will arise as Yamas, Dharmaraja deities. Your own visions having become devils, you will wander in the life cycle. Hey, noble one, if you do not recognize your own visions, though you become expert in all scriptures of Sutra and Tantra, though you practice the Dharma for an aeon, you will not become a Buddha. If you recognize your own visions with one key, one word, you will become a Buddha. If you do not recognize your own visions, then the moment you die, reality arises in the between in the image of Yama Dharmaraja, the Lord of Death. The Yama Dharmaraja deities will arise at most filling all space, at medium like huge mountains filling the whole world. Their fang-like teeth protruding over their lips, their eyes like glass, their hair bound up on top of their heads, with protruding bellies with thin necks. They carry punishment boards and shout, "Beat him and kill him." They lick up your brains, they sever your head from your body, and they extract your heart and vital organs. Thus they arise filling the world. Hey, noble one, when it happens that such a vision arises, do not be afraid, do not feel terror. You have a mental body made of instincts. Even if it is killed or dismembered, it cannot die. Since, in fact, you are a natural form of voidness, anger at being injured is unnecessary. The Yama lords of death are but arisen from the natural energy of your own awareness and really lack all substantiality. Voidness cannot injure voidness. Except insofar as they arise from the natural creativity of your own awareness, you must firmly decide that all that you see, the mild and fierce deities, the Hirukas, the animal-headed angels, the rainbow lights, and the Yama deities, none is substantially, objectively existent. Once you understand that, then all the fears and terrors become liberated on the spot. You dissolve into non-duality and become a Buddha. If you so recognize them, you must feel intense faith, thinking they are my archetype deities. They have come to escort me through the straits of the between I take refuge in. Be mindful of the three jewels. Remember whoever is your archetype deity. Call him or her by name. Pray to him or her. I am wandering lost in the between. Be my savior. Hold me with your compassion, O precious deity. Call on your spiritual teacher by name, praying, I am wandering lost in the between. Be my savior. For compassion's sake, do not let me go. Feel faith in the Heruka deity host and pray to them. And then they read the prayer, you know. When I wander in the life cycle driven by powerful instincts. Actually, you read it together. Or any of you have the book, read it together. When I wander in the life cycle driven by powerful instincts, may the host of mild and fierce lords lead me on the path of the clear light that conquers terror visions of hate and fear. May the fierce Ishwari goddesses hosts back me on the way Deliver me from the dangerous straits of the between and carry me to perfect Buddhahood. Now that I wander alone, apart from my loved ones, and all my visions are but empty images, may the Buddhas exert the force of their compassion and stop the fear and hate-drawn terrors of the between. When the five lights of brilliant wisdom dawn, fearless, bravely, may I know them as myself. When the forms of the Lords mild and fierce arise, bold and fearless, may I recognize the between. Now when I suffer by the power of negative evolution, may the archetype deities dispel that suffering. When reality crashes with a thousand thunders, may they all simply become Om Mani Padme Hum. When I am pulled by evolution without recourse, may the compassionate Lord Avalokiteshvara provide me refuge. When I suffer due to evolutionary instincts, may the clear light bliss samadhi dawn upon me. May the five main elements not arise as enemies. May I behold the pure lands of the five Buddhas, clans. Thus you should pray with intense reverence and faith. It is extremely important since your fear and terror will thus disappear and you will surely become a Buddha in the beatific body. Let's read it all again. It says five or seven times. Just think about anybody who died now. Or yet share with somebody if you don't have a copy of the book. I'm sorry. Yes. Go share with somebody. It's good to read it yourself. When I wander in the life cycle, driven by powerful instincts, may the host of mild and fierce lords lead me on the path of the clear light that conquers terror visions of hate and fear. May the fierce Ishvari goddesses host me, back me on the way, deliver me from the dangerous straits of the between, and carry me to perfect Buddhahood. Now that I wander alone, apart from my loved ones, and all my visions are but empty images, may the Buddhas exert the force of their compassion and stop the fear and hate-drawn terrors of the between. When the five lights of brilliant wisdom dawn, fearless, bravely, may I know them as myself. When the forms of the Lords mild and fierce arise, bold and fearless, may I recognize the between. Now when I suffer by the power of negative evolution, may the archetype deities dispel that suffering. When reality crashes with a thousand thunders, may they all become Om Mani Padme Hum. When I am pulled by evolution without recourse, may the compassionate Lord provide me refuge. When I suffer due to evolutionary instincts, may the clear light bliss samadhi dawn upon me. May the five main elements not arise as enemies. May I behold the pure lands of the five Buddha clans. Good. And now if you have a person who passed away, when you say I, you think of yourself as that person. Or you could, if that's hard for you, you can say to them, you could change the I to you. And change all the me's to you and go you know, like when you wander in the life, let's read it again with you's everywhere. When you wander, I'm thinking now of Natasha. When you wander in the life cycle driven by powerful instincts, may the host of mild and fierce lords lead you on the path of the clear light that conquers terror visions of hate and fear. May the fierce Ishvari goddess hosts back me on the way. Deliver me from the dangerous straits. Deliver you back you on the way. Deliver you from the dangerous straits of the between and carry you to perfect Buddhahood. Now that you wander alone apart from your loved ones and all your visions are but empty images, may the Buddhas exert the force of their compassion and stop the fear and hate-drawn terrors of the between. When the five lights of brilliant wisdom dawn, fearless, bravely, may you know them as yourself. When the forms of the Lords mild and fierce arise, bold and fearless, may you recognize the between. Now when you suffer by the power of negative evolution, may the archetype deities dispel your suffering. When reality crashes with a thousand thunders, may they all become Om Mani Padme Hum. When you are pulled by evolution without recourse, may the compassionate Lord provide you refuge. When you suffer due to evolutionary instincts, may the clear light, bliss, samadhi dawn upon you. May the five main elements not arise as enemies. May you behold the pure lands of the five Buddha clans.
really cool. I'm thinking of Natasha. Natasha. No, I'm going to skip here. We're going to come, but I want to just read on this because this is kind of so interesting. And then we'll come back and do tomorrow. We will do the orientation to the existence between. But on page 169, I want to just go over this thing about what I have subtitled in here: powers and problems of a between being. It's having to do with this definition actually on 168, which comes from the Guhyagarbha Tantra. Having the fleshly form of the preceding and emerging lives, senses all complete, moving unobstructed, with evolutionary magic powers, one sees similar species with pure clairvoyance. So that's kind of a definition in like a tantric scripture. And then they define it in the subsequent lines. And they say preceding here means that for up to, you know, preceding and emerging lives. Here preceding means that you arise as if in a flesh and blood body determined by the instincts of your preceding life. If you are radiant and have traces of the auspicious bodily signs and marks of a mythic hero, it is because your imagination can transform your body. Thus, that perceived in the between is called a mental body, a manomaya kaya. And then below it says, at that time, if you are to be born as a god, you will have visions of the heavens. If you are to be born as a titan, a human, an animal, a pritan, or a hell being, you will have a vision of whichever realm you will be born in. Preceding here means that for up to 4.5 days you experience yourself as having a fleshly body of your previous life with its habitual instincts. Emerging means that you begin to have visions of the place where you are heading for rebirth. So much for preceding and emerging. And of course, if you don't have good visions, then you definitely want to interfere with that heading, which comes from a deeper level in your unconscious, and you want to like change that. And of course, the best time to change is before you die. But even so, now the guide here in this wants to help you change it already. You know? So therefore, do not follow after every vision that happens. Don't be attached to it. Don't adhere to it. If you are stubborn and attached to all of the visions, you will roam in suffering through the 6 realms. Up until yesterday, the visions of the reality between dawned for you, but you did not recognize them. So you have had to wander here now. So now if, without wavering, you can develop recognition, the spiritual teacher's orientation can open your awareness of the clear light, the naked, pure, vibrant void. Enter into it, relax into the experience of non-holding and non-doing. Without having to enter a womb, you will be liberated. If you do not recognize the light, then meditate that your spiritual teacher or archetype deity is present on the crown of your head, and devote yourself totally with a strong force of faith. It is so important. Do it without wavering again and again. And then what I wanted to do here is, senses all complete, moving unobstructed, means that even if in life you were blind, deaf, crippled, and so on, now in the between your eyes clearly discern forms, your ears hear sound, and so forth. Your senses become flawlessly clear and complete, so senses all complete. Recognize this as a sign that you have died and are wandering in the between, and remember your personal instructions. And hey, noble one, what is unobstructed is your mental body. Your awareness is free from embodiment, and you lack a solid body. So now you can move hither and thither everywhere through walls, houses, land, rocks, and earth, even through Meru, the axial mountain. Except you cannot move through a mother's womb, and you cannot move through the Vajra throne at Bodh Gaya under the Bodhi tree. This is a sign that you are wandering in the existence between. So remember the instructions of your spiritual teacher. With evolutionary magic powers means that you who have no special abilities or meditational magic powers whatsoever now have magic powers arising as a result of your evolution. In a split second, you can circle the four-continent planet with its axial mountain. You now have the power just to think about any place you wish, and you will arrive there in that instant. You can teach anywhere and return just as a normal man stretches out and pulls back his arm. But these magic powers are not so miraculous. If you don't specially need them, ignore them. You shouldn't worry about whether or not you can manifest this or that. The fact is, you have the ability. And then you're also aware of other beings. And finally, you cannot be destroyed because you have only this mental body. That's the main thing I wanted to make, because we were just talking about the fierce thing. Okay, so we'll come back to that tomorrow, this existence between, and we'll go over that in detail about being reborn. So tonight now, the last thing, since we talked about this fierce vision, we're going to now meditate in a mantric way of meditating. Now, first, we'll go into meditative mode. And we will remember, we've had all day long, we've had Padmasambhava and Buddha and Jesus, whoever it is, whole sky full of enlightened beings shining down on us in the 90-degree weather, at 90-degree blessings. And also, we had all the beings around us, that all the beings that we know, and we're sending blessings to them. Either even beings who have passed away are all there with us, looking at us, and we're blessing them. The blessings are reflecting from us to them. We're back in that setting. We're just reminding ourselves that we're in that setting. We've been in that setting all day. And now, so first, you're used to doing this breath counting. So first you do breath counting. 1, 2, 32. And then back to 1. See if you can get to 32. You're getting to be more expert now. Without thinking anything. And it's especially hard for me because my mind is working, thinking about what to say and do and so on, where to lead you. So you should easily be able to relax and just count 1 to 32 without being distracted. If you are, note the distraction, dismount that chain of thought, come back to counting, go back to 1. Now that you meditated, counting breaths, stay meditating. And now begin to say in a murmuring type of voice, Om Mani Padme Hum.
Om, follow me. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Going. Now, as you keep going with this, you use it like the breathing, but instead of counting, you're keeping your mind on Om Mani Padme Hum. And then you notice wandering thoughts even as your mouth is going Om Mani Padme Hum. And you come back to the Om Mani Padme Hum. You don't have to count them, but you just keep repeating them. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Keep repeating it now, and then visualize in the space above, in the place of the enlightened beings, there is a four-armed snow-white Avalokiteshvara, holding the wish-fulfilling gem of universal compassion in his front two arms, a crystal rosary in his upraised right hand, and a white lotus in his back left hand, and that in his heart there is a wheel of Om Mani Padme Hum, like a mani wheel. And as you recite Om Mani Padme Hum, that wheel turns, radiating rainbow light rays in all directions. And from the Om that you recite, a Buddha is sent to the heavenly realms of the gods to teach the gods about impermanence and wake them up from their pleasure stupor. The Ma syllable sends a Buddha to the human realm to tell the beings about wisdom and compassion and get them to devote their human lives to evolving in a positive way toward Buddhahood. The Ni goes to the animal realm, helping the animals become awakened and become less deluded and more aware of each other and of the world. The Pe goes to the hell realm, and it sends a Buddha there to liberate the beings from the hell realm and quiet the demons of the hell realm and make them merciful to the beings caught there. The Me goes to the Preta realm and the Pretas, and gets the Pretas food and drink and rains food and drink upon them and helps to release them from that realm. And the Hung goes to the Asura realm and liberates the Asuras from jealousy and pride and power and gets them to overcome their envy of the gods and turn them toward enlightenment. So as you say the Om Mani Padme Hum, these light rays and Buddhas emanate from the heart of the Bodhisattva of infinite compassion, and you're sending blessings and help to all the beings in all the realms of existence. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 So as you say Om Mani Padme Hum, you're lending your heart's wish for the welfare of all beings and their freedom from suffering to energize the infinite activities of the Bodhisattva of universal compassion, Avalokiteshvara. Om Mani is emanating millions of emanations everywhere to whatever people need. And you can't do that yet yourself, but by saying Om Mani Padme Hum, you're lending your heart's energy to that. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Mani padme hum. Om 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 mani padme hum. Mani padme hum. Om 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 mani padme hum. Keep chanting. Om mani padme hum. You use the same mindfulness to come back to the chanting, like you do when you count your breathing. Om mani padme hum. 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 It has a double thing. Keep repeating. It's a double thing. Where when you repeat Om mani padme hum and salute Avalokiteshvara with it, the mantra has the meaning kind of that everything is well with the world because the power of infinite compassion is enfolding all the beings and is operating at the maximal efficiency to help them free themselves from suffering. And at the same time, in as far as one still has a vision of beings as suffering and somehow can't see it as sort of perfect, and then the Om mani padme hum is sort of empowering and intensifying that manifestations of infinite compassion. Sort of one has a passionate compassion of wanting Avalokiteshvara to do more, to do it faster, to do it better. One wants to join with Avalokiteshvara to do it. If you have initiation of Avalokiteshvara, you can be Avalokiteshvara and you can do it as you and have this wheel of Om mani padme hum in your heart and spinning in your heart and sending out these light rays to all the realms of being. Om mani padme hum. Om mani padme hum. Om mani padme hum. That shine from that as you recite the mantra, that Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and actually whatever it is that people need all over the world, they go out there and reflect on the many children dying of starvation in Africa and how the Om Mani Padme Hum sends food to them and how the Om Mani Padme Hum intervenes in war zones where children are made to kill each other and so forth and makes them peaceful. And the Om Mani Padme Hum goes to the place where there's child slavery in India and Pakistan and Thailand and such things and tries to make the owners relent and release the children to go to school and to learn something. And how the suffering animals who are dying and the polar bears whose things are thawing and all the different insects being crushed. And go up, send your mind all over the world to all the terrible suffering in our own cities, the people who are thrown out of work and who are poor and who are homeless and losing their homes and losing their livelihood and feeling terribly shattered and becoming frustrated and violent within the family. May they not do so. May they be peaceful. And may the terrible Dick Cheney and the Republican senators and Rush Limbaugh, may they relent and may their hearts soften and may they decide not to deprive people. And the Bobby Jindal and Sanford in the southern states where they're refusing even federal help for the poor and for the destitute, and so they won't let that help go to the poor and destitute. May they change their mind and may they soften their attitude. And may even those who are poor and suffering and starving, even those who are dying, may they feel peaceful. May they not feel angry. May they put their mind to this suffering, use this suffering to relieve themselves of the karmic burden of that and to put their mind toward helping other beings. And doing like the Dalai Lama always says, where when he feels terrible suffering and terribly depressed, he uses compassion by and thinks of the terrible suffering of so many others until his own suffering seems less significant and less consequential and less horrible. And may they all learn to do that and broaden their mind with compassion as we repeat the Om Mani Padme Hum. And as the Book of the Dead said, may even the crashing, thundering sound of earthquakes and falling mountains and falling buildings and bombs crashing and suicide bombers in Iraq and Afghanistan and wherever, may they all turn into the sound of Om Mani Padme Hum. And even the people who are killed by them, may they immediately enter a good realm after death and go into the between state and be relieved from that horrible pain and the explosion and the suffering. Om Mani, as we keep repeating this and sending this wave everywhere in the world as best we can, and relying on the power of Avalokiteshvara and enlightened beings to embrace and to enfold these beings who mindlessly harm each other and feel pain and suffering, and to learn from that to evolve toward a place where they will not inflict harm and pain and suffering. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani. So your mind reaches out with Avalokiteshvara everywhere
So you wish you had 1,000 arms. You see why he has 1,000 arms and 1,000 eyes, and you wish you had 1,000,000 arms and 1,000,000 eyes and 1,000,000,000 arms and 1,000,000,000 eyes to see everywhere and all the pain and suffering and reach toward it and help the beings and say, Om Mani Padme Hum, emerging from every atom. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 And as you visualize all the suffering in the world, as you are repeating the Om Mani Padme Hum, sending the Om Mani Padme Hum toward all that suffering, and sending Avalokiteshvara toward it, and as you expand your compassionate mind to be aware of the terrible state of so many sentient beings, the way you avoid despair is very difficult. It is the bliss wisdom that makes you enable to avoid despair. You realize that the Dharmakaya body of the Buddha, that the Buddha is one with all of those suffering beings in their body of truth. And in their body of bliss, they are also one with the fact that all of that suffering somewhere in the central vein is made of bliss. Just like you could have a golden statue made of a dying being or a suffering being made of gold. And it's actually made of gold, even though the being is dying, is depicted as dying and suffering. And so somehow you don't despair, and you have a bliss that sees through the suffering. And you don't get caught up in the way the being itself experiences suffering, as if it was the ultimate thing in the universe. You see it as a transformable, changeable pattern. And you stay with that being, and you see Avalokiteshvara, the Lord of Compassion, staying with that being in the between state, even the being dies, and bringing it to a better life. And if necessary, if there's not enough food or enough room on this planet, on another planet, or somewhere in a Buddha land or in a realm of perfect infrastructure and so forth. So there's never any despair, never ever any giving up. You always bring the beings into a better place. So Mani Padme Hum never gives up and never releases and empties hells wherever they find them, empties Preta realms wherever they find it, empties animal realms wherever they find it, empties Titan realms wherever they find it, empties God realms wherever they find it, and brings people into the human realm to become toward Buddhahood. And you see all of that, so you maintain an ecstatic bliss, a fierce bliss that goes along with your compassionate wish and a sensitivity so that you don't go crazy and you don't get despaired. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Because the lotus, the Mani is the wish-fulfilling jewel of the universal compassion, and the Padme, the Padma, Padme or the Padme is the lotus of wisdom, of the perfection, of the blissfulness of all reality. So these are combined in some sort of inconceivable cognitive dissonance reconciliation. Om Mani Padme, done with ecstasy, with fierce ecstasy. Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Om Mani Padme Hum. Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Padme Hum, Om Mani 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 Padme Hum. Mani Padme Hum, Om 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 Mani Padme Hum.
Om mani padme hum, 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 Om mani padme hum. To calm down a minute. So there's that beautiful painting in the Delos building behind the desk, you know, on the hallway there. That is that forearmed Avalokiteshvara. Take a look at it. And then there's Om Mani Padme Hum floating in the sky, written in Tibetan letters. Then there's a little planet Earth at the bottom, you know, like indicating that Avalokiteshvara is all over the planet Earth. It's really, really beautiful. By a great modern contemporary Tibetan artist, Rabkar Wangchuk, who gave it to us, and who also paints traditional kankas and things. He's very skilled at that, but he paints these creative things. It's really very, very lovely. I was thinking of it when we read in the book about all the crashing thunders, even sound Om Mani Padme Hum. Hear Om Mani Padme Hum, even in the thunder. That's really nice. And I thought of that painting. So actually mantra, when you do mantra meditation like that, it can be more, when you can concentrate on that, it's almost better than the breath counting. But the breath counting is very, very good, and you can mobilize whatever you've learned or is bringing your mind back into the mantra repeating. Because when you repeat the mantra in a sustained way, but any mantra, but this mantra is such a great one. It's the national mantra of all the Tibetan people and Mongolians. And when you repeat it, then your mind, when you get used to it, your mind, your lips will go, Om Mani Padme Hum, Mani Padme Hum, and then your mind will start wandering. You'll have a second train of thought that will go wandering around. But then you bring it back to the verbal, the mantra repetition, just like you were doing to breathing. Om Mani Padme Hum, Mani Padme Hum. You bring your mind back to that. And it may be quicker than, as far as becoming more and more one-pointed, it may be a very quick way of doing it. Because in a way, when your mind wanders, it's because words come up in your mind. So when you're doing a mantra word, you're sort of taking the word energy and putting it onto the concentration point. That's quite a good method. And you surprise yourself when you realize that you can say, keep saying Om Mani, but when in your mind think about any old nonsense, it will start thinking about other things. Okay. All right. Everybody happy? Is anybody unhappy? Go stare at the fierce deity. These are the fierce deities, you know.